Welcome to Directly Speaking, a direct-to-consumer marketers podcast. Our podcast features marketing leaders in the direct-to-consumer and e-commerce space. We get to learn a bit about their brands and the stories behind them, compare notes on trends and challenges in the industry, and learn about how they approach their marketing journey. And then hopefully we get to know a little bit about them personally. I'm your host, Marcus Lancaster, head of direct-to-consumer strategy at Quad. And I'm really excited to have about today's guest, Dr. John Peterbaugh, a colleague of mine at Quad. John specializes in emerging media and new technology at Quad. He's a strategist and a technologist with in-depth experience in the integrated marketing multi-channel space. John co-founded one of the first mobile agencies, Nelly Moser, in late 2000s, pioneering early mobile apps and services for MTV. Examples include South Park, The Daily Show, and The Colbert Report, Sony Music, Warner Music, Virgin Mobile, and Amazon's Audible service. John works with Quad's clients on multi-channel marketing initiatives, media channel optimization, and connecting offline and online. He's a frequent speaker at industry events and a good friend of mine. John, it's so great to have you with us today.
Thanks, Marcus. Pleased to be on the podcast.
It's so cool to have you. You're my first and only colleague that I have on the show. And one of the things that I wanted to do today is, you know, it's timely as we turn the calendar over from 2023 into 2024 to talk about some of the trends in the space. But before we go there, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and the journey that brought you to Quad?
Oh, you bet. So, I spent a little too much time in school studying a bunch of different stuff, music, which we have in common, as well as computers and other things. And then I got the bug with the startup community. So I joined a startup and we went public in around the time of the browser wars, dating myself a bit there. And then I ran an agency for over 15 years that was subsequently bought by Quad and Brown. But all this time, I've done a lot of work in innovation and new technology and how it applies to marketing and advertising. And so I've kind of had our front row seat to kind of the mobile revolution and apps and so forth. And then a lot of this, how do you connect offline marketing like direct mail, print, and magazines with online and digital marketing?
Well, that's kind of why I wanted to bring you on today, John, because you have such a perspective and you've seen so much happen over the course of the last, you know, 20 years or so in the marketing space. One of the things you've shared with me that's been particularly interesting to watch in 2023 is the rate of change in the marketing space and how AI is impacting that rate. What are you seeing happen in that space?
Yeah, it's a great point. I mean, we've all recognized the impact that AI is and going to have, but I think it's going to be 2024 is going to be kind of a coming together of trying to bring the rate of change that an organization is capable of with the kind of faster change of technology, right? And I guess Scott Brinker has called this the MarTech law. So basically, technology changes exponentially, organizations change logarithmically, much slower. And so I think AI is going to really kind of bring this to a head. And I think it's going to go back to when businesses kind of first became digitized. Like everything was done with pencil and paper. And gradually, we brought accounting, sales, marketing, and a bunch of stuff into computers and into digitalization. AI is clearly going to be everywhere, and we need to think about the organizations to handle that going forward. And I think marketing is going to be the tip of the spear.
Let's dive into that a little bit. You're a marketing executive at maybe an emerging brand or a growing brand. What are the areas that you are looking to incorporate AI into your marketing strategies at this point?
Yeah, well, marketing, the tools already, if you look at the MarTech stack, is already 13,000 different marketing apps and tools, if you will. And AI has already permeated content, commerce, data, social, and advertising, at the high level. And then there's so many more specific things. And so we're going to see, it's going to go much, much more beyond just the the generational capabilities, right? The abilities for it to what people are calling kind of fancy autocomplete. But it's going to be able to give us much better, it's going to save us time and money in the creation, the auditing, the deployment of content, audiences, and forms of analytics and measurement.
Gotcha. So more than a content vehicle, do you think that the biggest challenge then is how you move your organization along to keep up with those changes? And what are some tips you have around that?
Yeah, it's a good question. I do think part of the tips will go into another one of the trends we're seeing too, but it is having a learning organization that can learn, understand what that learning means, and then change accordingly. And so I think it is really more of a, I think people have used the term flywheel, but it's an agile iterative approach that you have to make sure that you're taking into changes that are happening and modify things accordingly. I think one of the things is what the ChatGPT also brought about this whole era of kind of no code MarTech, right? So I think you're increasingly, it used to be engineers had to do all your marketing. And increasingly, I think with a lot of the AI and other marketing tools, non-technical people now can do very sophisticated applications, measurement tools, reporting. And so you no longer have kind of the engineer at the front of everything. It really can be done by marketers themselves. And so I think that's going to be a change, that you no longer going to have this kind of prominent IT role that you used to have.
That's fascinating. Okay. So one of the things that I have noticed in conversations with both brands and at events this year is a shift in focus to more comprehensive full funnel marketing strategies. And in fact, top of funnel, and particularly how top of funnel marketing impacts bottom funnel conversion, has become a big focus for some of the brands that we're dealing with. Have you seen that same trend? And what are your thoughts about what you've seen there?
Yeah, where I saw it first was really in direct-to-consumer space. So the D2C brands, I think, increasingly realize that these lower funnel tactics, which is often associated with performance advertising, that they're basically reaching a point of diminishing returns faster than they expected. And so you saw in the D2C space, you know, prior to the pandemic even, the adoption of a lot more traditional media, such as out-of-home, podcasts, and again, like you said, an interest of full funnel. And so I think, you know, I totally agree that we're seeing this across a number of retailers. You know, offline and online marketing organizations have recognized the importance of obviously the not only full funnel advertising, but also full funnel measurement.
Yes, I think you're the one that first said to me that attribution is so 2019.
Well, I'd even say 2009, but I'd even go back further. But yeah, so the full funnel approach really will set up a crisis in measurement. So you already have a challenge that if you go across the different groups within an organization, each one has their own set of dashboards and reporting mechanisms, often different platforms in different formats, or maybe they're dumped out to Excel or something. But there's already kind of, it's rare to find people that have even an integrated reporting dashboard that connects offline and online, even in something like Tableau. And then the second thing is you set teed up, basically attribution becomes a huge problem. As soon as you're doing full funnel that integrates both offline and online, you know, things like multi-touch attribution, which was very good to be when it was used inside the walled garden, like inside of Google or something, it basically leads to dead ends. And, you know, as you've heard me say many times, it really all comes down to incrementality. And we think incrementality, not attribution, is the way to measure, especially when you move to a full funnel marketing program.
So for someone with an emerging brand or a marketer that's you know, challenged for time, how would you go about recommending that they consider you know, incorporating full funnel tactics in a way that is effectively measurable?
Well, the measurability, and we'll get into this a little bit when we talk about addressable media. I think it starts, or we, you know, at Quad, we believe it starts from the household. You have to have known audiences, and there's different types of known stuff. You know, you have online traditionally a lot of the measurement was based on proxies for people, right? Devices and cookies and things. And so a lot of the reporting is either based on browsers or different variations of device measurement. And so it really doesn't allow you to know whether you actually have unique individuals. And so if you start with your marketing programs with known households or addresses, if you will, you can then set up measurements, right? It's classic. It goes back to the beginning of direct marketing, right? You do a holdout and you measure lift over control, and that allows you to get at incrementality. And so in some sense, the way to start to do this, as you deploy across the different vehicles and across the funnel, you can start to build measurement techniques based on known audiences.
That's fascinating.
And then also, obviously, it will get complicated quickly, and then you'll need to use things like media mix models and different ways to decompose the signals and really understand where you're getting different types of interaction effects and how print impacts digital and digital impacts print and so forth.
Yeah, and that requires some strategic approach to testing, which it seems like when I engage with some brands, sometimes it seems like they're either testing too many or too few variables at any one time. Do you see that?
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, my colleague Earl Potter is really kind of stressing that we all need to go back to school and start over with the scientific method, because we see so many companies basically paying lip service to testing. They do tests, they've run tests on everything, but they don't change what they're doing. And so either the tests are not bold enough, or what we think is often happening is they're not leading to conclusive results. And with the complexity of the different number of brand touch points and today's consumer, really, you need to set up the right experiments. And so it's really, again, going back to the scientific method and setting up experiments and looking at the results and then changing. Because most of marketing right now is really knowing what not to do. There's too many things to do and people are spreading themselves too thin. And so you need to have, again, back to the learning environment, you need to have an organization that's willing to learn, willing to fail, willing to not do a bunch of stuff and measure, using experiments. Luckily, the last thing I'll say on this is there's also a ton of tools, both online and offline, for testing, right? There's a number of digital and virtual software services that allow us to kind of rapidly test and learn, such as dynamic creative optimization. And there's tools also for, testing offline media with online panels before deploying in market to save time and money.
Yeah, well, and that you of course dovetail into one of the key differentiators of Rise, our performance media agency, and their ability to leverage their proprietary software Connects to help with that incrementality and help with effective testing. Very cool. All right, let's circle back for just a second. It's funny that you say most of marketing these days is knowing what not to do. What do you see some of the mistakes that marketers are making, or channels that they're investing in that maybe a little bit of fool's gold, and what are some channels that maybe they're overlooking that they should consider?
Well, it's a good question. As I say, I think people are with limited budgets that are just starting off in a new medium are spreading themselves too thinly. And therefore, you don't have enough money in any one channel. And so it's not so much that I would recommend a channel, but if you're going to do advertising in one of the walled gardens or on the open internet, you need to pool and focus a majority of your spend in that space. And we're seeing this too. We have large catalog customers that have a disproportional spend in their print catalogs. And as they move to digital, they're spreading it across too many different touch points. So that's one thing I would start with. The other thing too is, and this is going to, I come from a mobile background, a mobile agency background, but I've seen the performance of direct mail. And so one thing that is very interesting right now is basically with all the MarTech stacks, you can make direct mail act like email. And one of the appeal, I think, for smaller organizations is it's perceived that direct mail is expensive. But what I still like about it is that it's fully measurable and you can get a lift over control and look at incrementality. And so we've seen some very strong return on ad spend for remarketing using direct mail, just like you've seen remarketing using other digital tactics.
I really like that. And you're right. We have seen some good success in it. I didn't intend to originally talk about that, but let's talk a little bit about remarketing, digital remarketing using direct mail. How does it work? And what are some key things brands should think about if they're going to engage?
Well, yeah, I think brands, well, certainly in the D2C space, but other retailers already are spending a lot of money in remarketing. Remarketing or retargeting is a big chunk of a lot of the digital spend. And so there's many forms of remarketing, right? Many sites will put pixels on their own sites that allow them to, if someone comes to visit the site, they'll allow ads to show up on Facebook or when you're searching on Google or in the context of some other piece of content. But what you're talking about here with the direct mail remarketing is you're looking at people coming to a website and you're basically scoring them based on who you know, using a machine learning or whatever your favorite algorithm is, regression. And you're picking out the top people that you think are most likely to buy. And then the reason the direct mail portion of it works is you then can get it into their house within 3 to 5 days. And so you basically are sending out direct mail. So you visit a site and then you get a physical impression at your doorstep in your mailbox a couple days later while it's still fresh. And as you've seen as well, we've both seen very strong results to upstart brands as well as mature catalogers in this space.
That's really cool. Yeah, really, ultimately, some kind of online to offline remarketing strategy should be basic to virtually everyone, as it's very easy to drive positive ROAS.
That's right. And what we're talking about is we're remarketing to anonymous audiences. So it's people you do not know that are prospects. And so you're using identity graphs and other techniques to get at their physical mailing address. And so it's part of a larger thing where, of course, we're capturing email addresses and mobile phone numbers so we can reach them with SMS and email. That's remarketing to known audiences. What we're talking about here is also introducing into the mix remarketing to unknown audiences, prospects, and direct mail does a good job with that.
That's really cool. Can you build into those campaigns with digital remarketing as well, or to support those direct mail campaigns?
Absolutely, absolutely.
All right, let's switch back. You started to put a nod to addressable media early in our conversation. That's something you've been talking a lot about lately: contextual versus addressable media, and what those things are. You want to kind of talk to our audience about what that means and what that might mean for their business?
Yeah, I think what we've seen over the past year, and I think in 2024, it'll just continue to accelerate, is all these, there's a bunch of false dichotomies: performance versus brand marketing, direct versus indirect marketing, paid versus owned media. These are all starting to become less useful because when you have the right measurement and testing frameworks, you can think about all media as addressable media. And so what's happening here is, I think what's driving both, like you mentioned, contextual advertising as well as addressable media, all comes back to this people preparing for this process of deprecation of cookies and IP addresses. So basically, various forms of digital identification have started to cause brands to shift their approaches to advertising. And this has been coming for a while. And, you know, many of us, you know, it's gone much slower than I think a lot of people thought, right? Cookies are still around. There's still processes. But ultimately, this has forced you to go back to kind of two approaches. So the prospect of cookieless advertising really has brought back contextual advertising. And contextual advertising has basically been around for a long time in the internet because it's basically making direct buys based on the content of the pages where the ads are appearing. So it's just become more sophisticated with the amount of keywords and context you can use. And so you basically can place ads in context of what people are reading, which is, you know, tends to improve the response and retention and so forth. As it relates to addressable media, again, you know, we prefer that term over direct marketing, but it's basically communicating directly with known audiences, right? And so, you know, one form of addressable media is basically leveraging physical addresses, like from a household, right? And you can then place ads directly to just those households. And we found that for open internet, that's very effective. If you just want to reach specific households, and we have advertising partners that you're well aware of, that definitely leverage this technique.
Gotcha. And
yeah. So anyways, I find both. So then just to contrast that, you know, traditionally when you're advertising on walled gardens, you're basically communicating indirectly with unknown audiences. And so really trying to set up those two contrasts so we can really think about, you know, addressable media versus other options.
The other thing I wanted to dive into a little bit today with you, John, is what you're seeing as trends in the MarTech space. I think the term you like is democratization of marketing. Why don't you talk a little bit about that and what you're seeing?
Yeah, so just while everything is getting kind of more complex. There's more apps, there's more options. At that same time, I think there's a convergence or kind of a aggregation effect that's coming down to basically three core platforms. You have customer platforms, engagement platforms, and data platforms. So if you think about it, basically these a bunch of cloud data warehouses, they've basically made it so that you no longer need to mess around with ingesting, copying, and moving data. So that used to be a huge thing, you know, going back to CRM systems and so forth. And that move has freed up basically customer data platforms to be more of an orchestration layer that allows us to tie together the engagement platforms and the data. So basically, you know, by engagement, I mean any marketing or sales and engagement platform, you know, that allows us to communicate across channels.
Gotcha.
What's exciting, as I mentioned before, is basically these platforms, all their features now are accessible to people without the requirement of engineers. And that's what I mean by the democratization of marketing.
Gotcha. So easier to onboard, easier to change, and easier to flex their resources to help your brand achieve its goals.
Yes. Now, one of the goals that now is paramount as part of that whole deprecation of cookies and just the challenge that all these large walled gardens pose to brands and marketers is the importance of right zero and first party data. And so if you back things up, right, ultimately, if we're talking about media and advertising, you know, media is really about the transference of value, right? It's the means by which content's kind of moved from one place to another. And so media is really built on a foundation of trust and, you know, this idea of transparent value exchanges. And I think that's critical to our strategies for collecting zero and first party data, right? We need to have frameworks and forms of addressable media that allow us to capture this right data, which in will turn allow us to make it addressable, right? We'll be able to go after people, and that it'll become measurable, right? Because we'll actually have known audiences.
I gotcha. And that's one reason why you always recommend, for example, the inclusion of flow code in when we do offline to online remarketing, because the ability to capture that first party data.
Yeah, as you know, just for the audience, flow code is just another brand of QR codes. Full disclosure, Quad is a partner, but we've found that it's become critical to media strategies, right? You can't watch a sports show these days or a news program without seeing these flow codes, those round QR codes, if you will, on the media. And it allows a direct connection between the advertiser and the consumer. And it's a great way to capture first party data, as well as, performing those direct connections, you know, that it's not mediated like most ads are through some walled garden, if you will.
Got it. All right. Well, let's change gears just a little bit. Let's flash forward. What are we going to be talking about 1 year from now in our space? What do you think is going to happen in 2024 that's going to change the tone of this conversation a year from now?
I think addressable media will become possible across multiple channels. There's been a long time coming for connected TV, or people call addressable TV. So I think you'll be able to run multi-channel campaigns with direct mail or catalogs, connected TV, applications, and addressable geofencing to reach households. And so I think you'll have a very rich landscape of addressable media that's based on strong first-party data for marketers. And so it'll be much better than buying third-party or buying other people's data on exchanges and building audiences that you kind of squint at that form these kind of cohorts that ultimately may or may not make sense. I'm kind of excited that I think there's a prospect of being the ability to do, true multi-channel marketing via addressable media.
That's fascinating. So the brands that do that should have a good 2024. All right. Well, what are some D2C brands that you admire, John? What are some brands that you think are doing some really cool stuff in the marketing space?
Well, yeah, I mean, there's a lot going on in the space, and it's kind of, I think it's an example of extremes in some sense. So I think at the one end, you wouldn't think about it, but the largest e-commerce companies, like obviously Amazon and Wayfair, are doing a ton of print. And so, you know, again, if you go back, you know, print was the original programmatic media. And so a lot of the stuff that they're doing is a combination of very traditional scheduled media, but is also moving to more of this kind of what I'd call always on or behavioral based targeting. And so I think that's what you're seeing. And even the smaller companies are doing it at a much faster rate. And so we're seeing brands in the footwear space. I don't know if I can mention them, but basically they're moving a lot of their budget to be more trigger based marketing, birthdays, anniversaries, you know, behavioral changes. And so I think that's a big move from kind of scheduled traditional marketing to an always on approach.
Fascinating. All right. Very cool. Let's talk about you personally. You know, what keeps you fresh? What media do you like to consume?
Yeah. So good question. I listen to podcasts, listen to a lot of podcasts, listen to a lot. I read a lot. I still get my Sunday New York Times, which dates me a little bit. Lots of aggregation sources, you know, that go from anywhere from Medium to Reddit to all sorts of email newsletters.
Let's take it out of work. I know you're a big music fan. Is it music that keeps you energized outside of the work environment, or are there other things?
Well, I like ideas and new things in general. So I spend my time with interesting people. And I get energy from the exhaust off their passions, right? Hanging around with artists, musicians, thinkers, writers, in a wide range. So that kind of makes keeps me going by. And I also like to a little trick I've used is to keep things interesting. And a buddy of mine, this goes back to when we were in school, is before we go to see a movie, we would sell ourselves like, let's imagine this is a documentary on woodworking and construction. And it would be a totally, you know, totally different film, right? It would just be a consumer film. But if you watch it through a lens, it actually is very insightful. And I found this too, like early on, trying to find good music books, there's not nearly as many music books as there are art books. And so if you actually read some of the artists and art theorists and imagine that they're talking about sound when they're actually talking about images, you just place things. So you could say like an audiogenic image as opposed to an image, a sound produced image, you then can get all these other insights that you don't normally get. And so I get a lot of new ideas by this kind of mashup technique of reading a lot of different areas and reading things as if they're talking about other things.
That's
tends to break down walls.
If you could teach yourself, your younger self, one principle that's, you know, been essential to your success or that you wished you'd known earlier in your career, what would it be?
Well, I still think it goes back to this is lesson I want for myself today is to listen more intently, more often. There's so much opportunity to learn from every person you're with in an organization, on panels together, on any form of, you know, community building. It's just the ability to listen, because our ideas get in the way of our ability to really learn and draft off of others. And I think there's so much to be gained from listening and listening intently with an open mind.
Oh, I so agree. If someone wants to connect with you or reach out to you, John, what's the best way to reach out?
That's a great question. So I'm certainly on LinkedIn under John Peterbaugh. There's not a lot of John Peterbaughs at Quad. My email address, which is a little funny. It's JDPUTERB@quad.com. Quad makes it hard for us.
Sometimes. Well, my friend, I just really want to thank you for taking the time to be on. It seemed like such a great opportunity to bring you on right as we turn the calendar into the new year. And, you know, I treasure our ability to work together and the insight that you provide to me as a marketer. And I just want to say thank you for taking the time today.
Well, I want to thank you for doing this podcast. It's been a great series so far. So I'm certainly excited for you to continue this.
Excellent. Well, everyone, thank you very much for joining us today on Directly Speaking. We really hope you enjoyed the content and enjoyed the opportunity getting to know John a little bit better. We hope to have you with us again soon. Until then, keep selling.